This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
It's the Football Hour with Mark Grandy and Kyle Madsen. Wrapping up the week that was with sound from the locker room, highlights from the game, and much more. And now, here's Mark Grandy and Kyle Madsen.
Welcome into the Football Hour here on 95.7 The Game. Mark Grandy, Kyle Madsen with you after a rough Niners loss yesterday at Santa Clara against the two-time defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. 28-18 was the final score. The game didn't really feel that close. Kyle, the fact that it was a two-point game and could have been a tie game at one point in the second half honestly amazes me, because it felt like the Niners got outplayed in nearly every single facet of that game by a relatively wide margin, but they managed to keep it relatively close. But then things fell apart in the second half. Too many Purdy interceptions. He threw three of them. For my money, it was his worst game of his career. The defense could not get the stop when they needed it in that fourth quarter. A lot of runs and chunks of 4 and 5 yards for the Chiefs as they were churning out long drives. The Niners just never put it together for longer than like a 5-minute stretch, and when you do that against the two-time defending champs who have made a habit of winning games like that over and over and over again, Kyle, you're not going to win against that kind of team, and that's what happened yesterday at Levi's Stadium.
The Brock Purdy worst game of his career thing is where I've kind of been hung up all day, because there was a game last year on Christmas against the Ravens. Yeah. The one against the Browns last year was pretty rough. There's a couple of games you can pick out. Not a lot, but there's a couple. I think the most disappointing part of yesterday is what you said here at the beginning. They were only down 2 at one point in this game.
Made no sense.
The plays were there, though. The long throw to Kittle probably should have been a touchdown. Mm. The long throw to Jacob Cowing, salute to the rookie, that should have been a touchdown through no fault of Cowing. That was just not a great throw from Brock. And that's what sticks out to me. And that's why I think yesterday's game is really disappointing. And I want to spin it forward a little bit as we go on this yeah. journey together for this next hour. But the thing I keep coming back to as I go back and I rewatch and I start looking through things is the plays were there. And that's what makes it so frustrating. Even with the interceptions, even with some of the errant throws that Purdy had and some of the indecisiveness in the pocket it looked like he had, there were throws to be made to win that game, and he didn't make them. And that to me is why it's such a bummer. It's like, man, even as bad as they were yesterday, ostensibly that game was 28-12, right? They got the touchdown there at the end, but so as poorly as they played, you can still pick out 4 plays in that game that if they go differently, we're looking at a different result, which is just kind of the story of the season for the 49ers.
Those two 41-yard completions, the one to Kittle turned into a field goal, correct? Yeah, it did. Mm-hmm. And then the 41-yarder to Cowing turned into the Purdy touchdown run. Did it?
No, that turned into the interception.
Yeah, yep. Correct. So,
Third interception.
Yeah, the third interception in the end zone. All three of the interceptions were on the Chiefs side of the field. So they all were meaningful interceptions that took away potential scoring drives. The last one was the one that happened in the end zone that took away potentially 7 points. So they all were big. And that Cowing completion, if it's a perfect throw, goes for a touchdown, and that interception never happens. So those mm-hmm. two misses, if we want to count it that way, cost you, what, 4 points on the first one and then 7 on the second one. So that's a pretty big difference. It's also a thing where we focus on those two completions that went both for 41 yards but could have gone for touchdowns if they were perfect throws because mm-hmm. there was not a lot of great elsewhere. Like, if those other interceptions, Kyle, don't happen and he completes those passes, or at least they're incomplete, you harp a little bit less on the completions that could have been bigger completions because at least you weren't turning the ball over elsewhere. But those completions that could have been touchdowns that weren't suddenly aren't just the negatives from the day. They're actually like the negative disguised in a positive for the day because you had so much else that was worse. Like, you had the interceptions and you had 41 yard completions, but it could have been touchdowns. At least if you weren't turning the ball over, you could say, well, you know, 41 yard completions there. Yeah, he wasn't perfect, but if we were handing out a grade for him, maybe it's a B- day instead of an F because he didn't turn the ball over, right? But he wasn't great because he didn't hit his receivers in stride and it cost them a couple of points here and there. So, I mean, we can pick and choose at that all we want. The Ravens game last year wasn't good. The Browns game wasn't good. There were some other circumstances in that Browns game where you're on the road against an elite defense. It's rainy. It's wet. Trent Williams doesn't play for most of the game. Deebo Samuel doesn't play for most of the game. I know there are circumstances in this game as well. I hold on to the fact that I thought he was largely good against the Ravens. There were some weird plays that resulted in the interceptions. He was not good. Now, he wasn't aided by really anything else that was going on offensively either, but when we're talking about the quarterback of the 49ers who has been to an NFC Championship game and a Super Bowl in his first 2 years as the starter and has one of the best rosters in the NFL, I'm sorry, but the standard is pretty darn high. And just because you're without Deebo and you're without Ayuk and you're without McCaffrey doesn't excuse the fact that you played a really, really bad football game.
You know what's kind of funny to me? In the way we're kind of talking about this performance from Brock, and really the way we've talked about him all year, it's a little bit funny to me that I think the improvement I would like to see him make, I'd like to see him manage the game better, ironically. Like, they're just... I know that game manager is such a negative thing now, right? If you, game manager is like, you're terrible.
Yeah, they use that as an insult for Brock, even though he has not been a game manager this year.
No, not at all. But I would like to see him be more of that.
Yeah.
Because there are a handful of plays. There were a couple plays again yesterday where there's an easy check down throw. It's like, just take that. Take those 6 yards. Get to second and short. And I think that there's so much focus on, I don't know if this is because of the McCaffrey injury, so he's trying to take it more on himself to push the ball down the field, and he is, and he's having success. But I thought yesterday, the interception in the end zone, just throw it out the back, man. Just live to play another down. Take a field goal, get down 6, and try and get your onside kick. Like that's the way that's supposed to go. And Kyle Shanahan said as much in his conference call today. So that's something I would like to see from Brock Purdy moving forward. Is like, doesn't need to be a game manager from the standpoint of operate within this, you know, 10-yard box between the numbers and 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. It doesn't need to be that. But when there's nothing there downfield, take your check down or get it. Rely more on the shorter throws than he had been. I would like to see him do that through the rest of the season, because I think that's where he can really improve as a quarterback, is marrying what he did last year with the uptick in pushing the ball down the field. I think there's a happy medium there where you get a really, really freaking good quarterback.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think some of that is also probably play design and scheme and play calling. Obviously, you know, a good offense has a number of different options, and you're not necessarily drawing up a play to say, all right, this is designed to throw to your fullback out in the flat. Like, that's kind of oftentimes the last line of defense. It's your last option. But there has been a concerted effort to push the ball down the field, and that's not, I would imagine, just Broxton being like, you know what? I'm confident enough in my arm now, I'm going to let it rip when I didn't last year. I'm sure it has been a thing that has been discussed from Shanahan to Brock throughout training camp, throughout the preseason, and throughout the season. So I think there's an area for both Shanahan and the offensive scheme as a whole and Brock Purdy to do that. And I'm totally in agreement with you. What's interesting, when prepping for this matchup, you go through some of the numbers and some of the advanced analytics, and I don't need to bore everyone with the exact numbers. Brock Purdy, basically as aggressive as it comes for quarterbacks this year in terms of pushing the ball down the field. Right. Patrick Mahomes, like, the least aggressive in the NFL. As a result, you have Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense, most percentage of their passing yards come after the catch. Meanwhile, the 49ers, like, the least, the lowest percentage of their receiving yards come after the catch. It's almost like a reverse from the common arguments that are used to dispel Brock Purdy. Like, it could not be less accurate, and it's actually entirely accurate for Mahomes and the Chiefs offense so far this year. And a lot of that has to do with the Chiefs injuries and all that, although they were relatively healthy for like the first 3 weeks of the season, and that's basically half of the sample size that we're talking about right now. But there's no doubt, Kyle, that the way that the Chiefs are attacking opposing defenses right now, it's just the simple stuff. It's taking what the defense is giving them. It's being creative with their play calling. It's using Mecole Hardman, who was a cast off from the New York Jets after he was a Chief the first time and they let him go. And then like 6 weeks into the season, the Jets were like, you know what? We don't need you. We don't want you. And he became a Chief again, and he caught the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl, and then he hurt you again yesterday at Levi's. Like, these are, I don't mean to be rude, brutal, but they're not stars, they're nobodies. And you have an offense that is able to just scheme them looks. What is this one player? What is his best skill? We're going to use that skill on this one play. That is what this play is designed for. It's easy, it's an end-around, it's a short throw into the flat, yep, it's a reverse, it's all of those sorts of things, and those are the things. I think this is the point that you're making, and I totally agree with you. Those are the things this Niners offense is missing. Some of it is on Purdy. Just take what they're giving you. I think we saw him do that against the Seahawks more than we've seen at any other point this season.
Agreed.
But wide, from a wide angle, the Niners offense as a whole, everything has just been too difficult, and it's just not as simple as saying, well, McCaffrey's out, Debo's in and out, Kittle missed a game. It goes deeper than that. It seems schematic to me, more so than just who's available and who's not.
I'm 100% with you, and I thought it was really interesting. Jacob Cowan gets on the field yesterday. Brandon Ayuk gets hurt. They go to commercial. He gets off the field. Jacob Cowan comes on. First thing they do is a design screen to Jacob Cowan. It goes for 9 yards.
Yeah.
Where's that been? Where has that been when Brandon Ayuk or Debo Samuel or whoever else is on the field? Like, this is where I would like to see Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers go, because I agree with you. This is not, if this was strictly a Christian McCaffrey problem, they would have figured something out by now. And the thing is that it's not that their offense stinks. They're moving the football. They're just not punching the ball into the end zone.
Yeah.
And it's cost him in a couple of games. If it was a Christian McCaffrey problem specifically, I think they would have figured it out by now. The game they were missing, Debo Samuel and George Kittle, their offense was fine. They had a couple of special teams mistakes against the Rams that really blew that one. One of my hopes is that, and we talked about this a little bit on Overtime with Sterling Bennett last night, but one of my hopes is that what all this injury stuff does is, if Debo Samuel, who's out with pneumonia for an indeterminate amount of time. Yeah. So wishing the best for him for sure. But he may not play next week. And Juwan Jennings with his hip injury, Kyle Shanahan said he's hopeful that he'll be back, but nothing firm on whether he'll play against the Cowboys. My hope is that this forces the 49ers into a little bit of what you're talking about the Chiefs doing. Where, all right, Jacob Cowing's got to be on the field. Here are the 7 things he can do. Here are the different ways we're going to scheme him up to get 6 touches in this game.
Yeah.
And here's what Ricky Pearsall, these are the three routes he's really good at and really comfortable with. We're going to move him around and we're going to mess with formations and mess with personnel groupings to make sure that he's running those routes in advantageous positions. Like, that's what the Kyle Shanahan offense like was for so long. It was like he had Jimmy Garoppolo, who what was Tom Brady's phrase yesterday? Below average?
Yeah.
Like, not a great quarterback, right? And it was like Kyle Shanahan went, okay, I have this not great quarterback. I have to scheme ways to get our guys the ball because I don't trust him to do it. So here, we're going to do all this stuff. I'm in my bag. We're doing this. We're doing that. Everything's crazy.
Yeah.
And then it was like he got Brock Purdy, who is more adept at running an offense and reading a field and going through reads and progressions and stuff.
Much better than Jimmy. Yeah. Much better.
We can all agree with that. Okay, good. and it's like he got, I don't want to say complacent, but that's how it feels. Like, oh, I have a drop back in pass. We're going to drop back and you guys, here's the routes. There's nothing fun. There's no fun motion. There's no cool designs. It's just, hey, Brock, go make a play, man. And so my hope is that if Jacob Cowing has to play a ton and if Ricky Pearsall has to play a ton, ideally Deebo Samuel and Juwan Jennings will be back ASAP. But if those two guys have to play a lot, my hope is that it forces Kyle Shanahan kind of back into the mode that he was in with Jimmy Garoppolo, where it's like, I have to scheme this open.
Yeah,
I have to take this a little bit upon myself because, frankly, I think he's gotten away from that a little bit.
I think so, too. And I was just watching Monday Night Football. NFL's doing this weird thing where there's two Monday Night games again. I don't really understand that. I hate it. It's dumb. Why are they dividing their audience? Don't get it. And one of them today is streaming only on ESPN+. Make it more difficult for your audience to watch games. Yeah, makes sense to me. But the first one, Tampa-Baltimore. Tampa on their first drive, and this also gets into something we were talking about last night in terms of Kyle Shanahan being so far behind the curve in terms of aggressiveness on fourth downs. And this is less about that, but it's more about the play call itself. Fourth and one, the Buccaneers on their first drive of the game, I think they're maybe somewhere around the 35 of Philly, yes. Maybe the 40. Kind of in that no man's land. It's a deep field goal, and if you don't get it, it's not like you're giving the opponents great field position, so you're kind of encouraged to go for it. Okay, I like the call. Go for it. What do they call? This is a team that has Mike Evans. They have Chris Godwin. Chris Godwin maybe has been the best receiver in the NFL so far this year. He's been incredible. You have a three-headed attack suddenly at running back. Not that any one of those are a star, but you got a lot of guys you can give the ball to.
Thumbs down on Rashad White, by the way. I'm out.
Not a very good player. Thumbs
get
up
to Bucky. Go Ducks.
Yeah, Bucky Irvin. There you go. You know where I was going. So my point is they have all these guys they can give the ball to.
Yeah.
They call a jet sweep to Jalen McMillan.
Brilliant.
Rookie wide receiver out of Washington. Not a bad player, but nothing special. And it gets him an easy 10 yards. Yep. 10 yards. No one even touched him until he was like 8 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Like, it's simple stuff like that. And I'm not saying Kyle Shanahan's never called an end around to, you know, their fourth string wide receiver. Like, it has happened. No, That could happen with Jacob Cowing week two, week three, week four, but now we're going to be forced into it because of all these other injuries, when it could be something that really could have been benefiting the team when they were losing to the Rams and the Cardinals early in the season.
To your point, and I'm so happy you noticed that too, because literally I'm not to brag, I was exercising while I was watching the Monday Night Football
game. Get it in.
And literally... I remember when the 49ers used to do stuff like that because the line all blocks down, like they're handing it off, but the receiver's coming in motion. They hand it off and then Baker continues as though he's going to hand it to, was it Irving in the backfield at that point?
Whoever was in the
backfield acted like he was going to hand it to him. Defense collapses and there goes McMillan. That was Jalen McMillan's first ever carry in the NFL. He had three catches in the NFL. It's not like this is a guy who's been a super productive rookie receiver, but that's dude, I am so glad you noticed that, because I noticed the exact same thing. When was the last time the Niners did anything even remotely cool like that that wasn't to Deebo Samuel?
Yeah,
it feels so like stagnant, which is crazy to say about a Kyle Shanahan offense with all these players and finally a quarterback who's at least good and perhaps very good.
And then
I don't get it.
You know what happened on the very next play? Baker Mayfield found their star receiver, Mike Evans, on the left side for a touchdown. Yeah. And I was thinking when you asked when was the last time the Niners did something like that, that play call. First of all, they probably never do it on fourth and one. If they're doing it, it's on like third and one. You're getting to fourth and one, and they're going to kick a 55-yard field goal versus going for it on fourth and one, which is another frustration that I have. But yeah, then they took advantage and they turned it into a touchdown against a really, really good team in the Baltimore Ravens, who have since responded and now lead, even though the Buccaneers were as aggressive as possible going for it on a fourth down on their first drive. That's the other part of this. You can call plays, make decisions based on the time and score of the game, and as a result, I think Shanahan generally tends to play it very conservative early in games because he does not want to make a back-breaking mistake that gets you out of a chance to potentially lead early or build a lead. But you also got to play your opponent. You're playing the two-time defending champions, and while maybe what they've put on tape hasn't been terribly impressive, like you just watch their tape without seeing the final score of every game, maybe you would be shocked that they're 6-0. You probably would be. Like, they haven't been great, but they play their best against the best teams on their schedule, and they play their best when it's winning time. And in those big moments, on those fourth and shorts, on those third and intermediates for their defense, they get those stops. You also got to play your opponent. And if you're going to come in and beat a team that you have never beat before, you're going to have to do something kind of special. And that includes maybe not necessarily trickeration, but creativity. And it includes going for it on fourth down. And it includes going for the two-point conversion to tie the game in the second half, for goodness sake. Like, there is a little bit more than just playing the time and score and realizing who you got and who you're going up against on the other side. And that's what made yesterday so frustrating for me from him. A play calling perspective, because it just felt like it was a run-of-the-mill game. Niners against the Rams, or Niners against the Cardinals, Niners against the Jaguars in October, when this one clearly meant a whole lot more than that.
Yeah, man. I think Kyle Shanahan knows, and this may be a larger issue than we want to dig into right now, but at some point, you need your guys to win one-on-one matchups to do what Kyle Shanahan wants to do on offense. And I don't think they have the dudes to win one-on-one matchups. And that's a larger problem. Because you knew going into the year up front, like, Colton McKivitz isn't great. You're relying on a rookie at right guard. And Dominic Pooney's been pretty good. But, like, Jake Prendel is a mid-NFL center. He is replacement level at best, right? And then at left guard, Aaron Banks is just okay. So you already knew this, and I think that's part of why he's not as aggressive, is because he doesn't have a ton of confidence in his offensive line. Jordan Mason spent a lot of time getting hit in the backfield yesterday, but man, I would love to see him. To your point, get creative instead. Do something that doesn't require all your guys to perfectly execute this block and win their one-on-one matchup against Chris Jones or George Karloftis or whoever it is.
Like, you know what I think of, and we got to hit a break in a minute, but I obviously this is not a fair comparison. I'm not saying that rookie Jacob Cowing is equal to rookie Debo Samuel. You remember 2019 when the Niners went to the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Debo Samuel, no one knew who he was. And I remember he kind of had a coming out party against the Seahawks, I believe, if memory serves. And he obviously got better as the season went along. It's not like Debo was a focal point of the offense for the majority of his rookie year. He was kind of used in that gadget play type of thing, reverses and end-arounds and screens and giving him short handoffs or quick throws, and then he'll break four tackles. I'm not saying that I expect that out of Cowing or any of the Niners rookies right now, rookie Pearsall included. But, like, Debo Samuel wasn't immediately the well-rounded player, and maybe you disagree, well-rounded. I mean, he does a couple of things very, very, very well. We know he's not the best route runner. But Debo Samuel as a rookie, Kyle, was kind of the gadget guy player, where Shanahan put him in those couple of positions where he's great at. And then he developed and got better and eventually became the guy we know him as now. But it wasn't always like that. I mean, his rookie year, it was here and there, special plays designed specifically for his skill set, and I think that's what we're missing.
Yep, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. Okay. We can talk a little bit more about that. However, I mean, 25 minutes of doom and gloom. Kyle, I know you want to take a little bit of a more optimistic approach to the rest of the season.
Try something different today.
And you can let the listeners know why you feel a little bit more positive potentially than you did last night. That's coming up on the other side as we continue here on the Football Hour on 95.7 The Game. We are sponsored by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. They're your 15-minute drive-through oil change. Visit the friendly expert technicians at your local Valvoline Instant Oil Change to check fluids, tire pressure, windshield wipers, batteries, and more. Locations and coupons at BayAreaOilChange.com. More Football Hour with Grandy and Kyle next on 95.7 The Game.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now back to the Football Hour with Mark Randy and Kyle Madsen on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. 49ers fall to the Chiefs 28-18. It's the Football Hour here on a Monday evening on 95.7 The Game. Mark Randy, Kyle Madsen with you. A lot of things to be frustrated by, and we just spent the first 30 minutes of the show breaking them all down, Kyle. But I know you have a reason to be optimistic, and despite everything that we just talked about and the Niners 3-4 record and the fact that they've got now a season-ending injury officially to Brandon Ayuk, and one that might threaten 2025 as well, by the way, ACL, MCL, and there's still potentially more damage to Brandon Ayuk's right knee that the MRI hasn't shown just yet. You got to explain this to me, because there is not a ton of reason to be optimistic given everything we've seen for the 49ers through 7 weeks, Kyle.
Yeah, I want to make sure I'm framing this correctly. Not optimistic, like I'm going to bet on this team to go to the Super Bowl. I'm not. It's not. I'm not there. I would be lying to you if I was saying that. But I saw a lot of reaction from people, not just locally but nationally, after the Brandon Ayuk news came down that the Niner season's over, they're done. And I would like to push back on that a little bit.
Okay, please do.
Because one, Kansas City is just good. Losing to Kansas City is, you know, that's what happens when you play Kansas City typically.
Yes,
and it wasn't a great performance, but we talked about this last night on overtime. They're 6-point favorites against the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football next week, which is something I definitely look at. But anyways, tucked into Kyle Shanahan's doom and gloom injury update today, where Juwan Jennings is still out and George Kittle's foot sprain is day to day, and Chris Conley ankle sprain, he's day to day, and Brandon Ayuk's got the ACL and the MCL and all this other stuff.
Debo's in the hospital with pneumonia and fluid in his lungs.
Thank you. Debo in the hospital with pneumonia. He mentioned, he got asked on the last question of his conference call was about if the Ayuk injury changed how they'll attack the trade deadline. Mm. And he more or less said that that's the wrong question. That was not the question I was looking at. But anyways, doesn't matter. He mentioned that Christian McCaffrey is expected to be back after the bye week. He said the bye week's coming. Hope to get Christian McCaffrey back over there. Oh, yeah. He was asked about just Christian McCaffrey and his rehab. Said probably not this week. Hopeful for right after the bye. So that's good. Get Christian McCaffrey back, and all of a sudden, even if after the bye week you've got Christian McCaffrey running out there with Debo Samuel and Juwan Jennings and Ricky Pearsall and Jacob Cowing fitting in here and there and George Kittle, all of a sudden that offense starts to look okay again. Mm-hmm. All right. The 49ers now in the month of October under Kyle Shanahan are now 14-21.
Yikes.
That is a 400 winning percentage. From November to January, they are 39-22. That is a 639 winning percentage.
And that includes years where they just were bad from start to finish.
That is since 2017. This is a team that plays better down the stretch. they self-scout really well, I think. And I think typically after the bye week, when they get a chance to sit down and really look at, instead of focusing on an opponent, focusing on themselves, that's where you can really start to make tangible, like meaningful changes to whatever they need to be doing. So I think if you're looking at this and you got it, I think getting to 4-4 is imperative. You have to beat the Cowboys and get to 4-4. But if you're 4-4 going into the bye week, yes, the schedule is very tough. I know. It's like Green Bay and Detroit and Tampa Bay and who else is in there? The Bills are in there. Chicago. You got another one against the Rams, Chicago. Like it's going to be.
You'll be in Miami gauntlet. Probably when the Miami is much healthier.
Yeah. It's going to be a gauntlet. And if you get to 4-4, you're going to have to go like 6-3 to make the playoffs, right? But with Christian McCaffrey back and with this team's history of winning in November and December and January, it's not something where I'm going, hey, this team's going to go back to the Super Bowl. You heard it here first. It's not that. But it helps ease the sting of that loss yesterday to Kansas City, where, yes, it feels like the world is ending and so many things went sideways and so many things went wrong. And I get it. I understand. I'm there. I'm with you. You should have heard overtime last night. It was tough. But on the other hand, like, all right, let's get clear of that game and let's look ahead. Let's clear our heads and figure out what's next. There's some reasons to feel okay. That's all.
Yeah. I tried this last night with you and Sterling, and you guys weren't having any of it, and I don't blame you. I mean, I'm not sure I even believe.
Well, you pointed at the 2022 3-4 record.
Yeah, and they. I mean, it's an oddly, like, mirror image. I mean, I know there's different circumstances. You have the Chiefs at home when you're 3-3, and you lose. And in 2022, you lost by 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So it was such a bad performance that some dude named Brock Purdy came in and got his first real run as an NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
And then you were 3-4. You beat a rival the following week to go into the bye at 4-4. Like, if there is and you didn't lose the rest of the regular season. There's a very real possibility that this season could follow a similar story, and it's for all the reasons that you laid out. You are presumably going to be more healthy in the second half of the season. I know it's without Ayuk, which is really unfortunate, but if everybody else is healthy, and that might be a major if, this is kind of trending toward a 2020 season when you've just got injuries all over the place and it only gets worse as the season goes along. But let's just for a second assume health generally for the rest of the season. You still have an offense that is maybe as talented as any other in the NFL in terms of just legit guys. You still would have Debo. You would have Christian McCaffrey. You would have George Kittle, and you would have Juwan Jennings, who is having the best year of his career up to this point. And when he's back and healthy, assuming that he gets back, he's going to probably have a great second half, because now you're down Ayuk and you suddenly need Juwan Jennings a whole lot more. You've got a rookie who you just saw for the first time, first round pick yesterday in Ricky Pearsall, who, by the way, oddly enough, played the most snaps of any wide receiver for your team yesterday. Wow. And while he didn't like go off or anything, had what, like 3 catches for 20 something yards? Ricky Pearsall stats here, 3 catches for 21 yards, not going to blow you away. He clearly played and did more than anyone was expecting him to have to, and he held up pretty darn well. Kyle Shanahan was very complimentary of him, and I agree with Shanahan. I was impressed. At the very least, not upset or frustrated by anything we saw from Ricky Pearsall yesterday. Story aside, it looks like he's going to, at the very least, be a serviceable wide receiver for the 49ers in his rookie season. So that's a good, that's a piece of good news. You still are going to have, Kyle, one of the most talented groups of offensive weapons in the entire NFL, and one terrible, terrible, terrible game aside from Brock Purdy. We don't need to sugarcoat it. It was very, very bad.
Awful.
Brock Purdy is a much better quarterback than any other time in the Kyle Shanahan era. Like, this is an offense that still should be able to put up 26, 27, 28, 30 points against a lot of defenses the rest of the year, assuming you have relative health. And while the defense probably, no, not probably, definitely is not as good as they were in 2022, they're good enough, and they were good enough yesterday to win the game if the offense just held up their end of the bargain. So I'm with you. The season is far, far from over, and I would not be shocked if we turn around and see this being a division-winning team. Not going to win 13 games, but they get to double-digit wins. That would not surprise me at all.
Can I run through some numbers with you? Because I agree. George Kittle, Deebo Samuel, Christian McCaffrey, Jordan Mason, don't rule him out. I think he's still going to have a pretty significant role. If you get anything from Cowing and Pearsall, and Juwan Jennings, still the team's leading receiver, by the way. I believe that's still the case.
That's
George
crazy.
Kittle might have passed him yesterday. But check this out. Who just off the top of your head, Mark, who's the best offense in the NFL right now?
I'd throw the Lions in there. Okay. Other good offenses. I don't know. I mean,
okay. Well, the Lions is the
Packers.
The name I was looking for.
Yeah.
The Lions, the Packers also right there. Number one in yards per play going into tonight was the Baltimore Ravens. They're averaging 6.9 yards
that's
per
true.
Play, which is insane.
They do it in a different way, but they are awesome.
Number two, the Detroit Lions, 6.4 yards per play. Tied with the Detroit Lions, the San Francisco 49ers at 6.4 yards per play.
That's without McCaffrey.
Percentage of drives ending in an offensive score, that's touchdown or field goal. Number one, the Washington Commanders. They have been unbelievable. Shout out to Jaden Daniels. Happy to hear that his rib injury isn't too bad. They're scoring on 64.1% of their offensive possessions, which is outrageous. Number two, the San Francisco 49ers at 49.3%. Ahead of the Detroit Lions at 47.8%. Ahead of the Baltimore Ravens at 47.7%. The difference between the 49ers and the Lions is the difference between like number three and number six.
And,
like,
and
this is not a bad, like, it's not the way we're talking about this, and I'm guilty of this too. That's why I'm saying the way we're talking about this offense is like the wheels are falling off. They don't know how to play football anymore. That's not the case. They're moving the ball. They're putting points on the board. They're just not punching it into the end zone. They are turning it over a lot. They are turning it over too often.
Yeah.
They have 11 turnovers this year, which is tied for the fourth most in the league behind the Raiders, Titans, and Panthers. But they're tied with the Packers, Cowboys, and Saints, and the Chiefs are at 10. So they need to turn the ball over a little less for sure, and they need to start converting red zone trips into touchdowns, which I think Christian McCaffrey is going to help with both of those things because, A, I think Brock Purdy trusts him on checkdowns where you're not going to see him trying to force the ball down the field too often, and then he's also going to help them a lot in the red zone just with the way that Kyle Shanahan can manipulate defenses with him. So all of that is to say the Niners' offense is still really freaking good. And they're about to get the reigning offensive player of the year back, presumably here in the next couple of weeks. Like, this is, there's a very real chance that the 49ers over the second half of the year average like 30 plus points a game and just become this juggernaut. So that's the other reason that I look ahead to the next, you know, post bye week, to the nine games after the bye, and I go, man, you get to 4-4, you're in a really, really good spot.
Yeah, and I think back to the offseason, there was all the drama around the draft, if the Niners were going to trade a wide receiver, and then all offseason long, think about the rumors with the Steelers and all that. Like, there was a gigantic possibility, and there was a big portion of the fan base, by the way, that was okay with the Niners trading Brandon Ayuk. And at the very least, you were going to be getting back like a young receiver, but it's not like you were trading Brandon Ayuk and getting back an all-pro receiver in return. You were becoming worse offensively to maybe help yourself out somewhere else. Maybe it was a draft pick if we're talking pre-draft. Maybe it was a future draft pick, which I would never have signed up for because you got to try your best to win right now, and a future pick does not help you do anything right now. That's an entirely different conversation. The point is, Kyle, that there was a gigantic portion of us that were like, yeah, the Niners offense should still be really good even if Ayuk isn't on the team and you don't get another offensive player in here to help them.
Right.
And that's the situation you're looking at right now. Obviously, there is the uncertainty with McCaffrey's injury, but as you're talking about, Kyle Shanahan said earlier today that they're hopeful that he returns for Week 10 after the bye when they take on Tampa on the road in Tampa. Then you've got Seattle, Green Bay, Buffalo, Chicago. Like, it's a tough schedule, no doubt about it. But you get him back. There's the uneasiness right now about Debo Samuel, who's suffering from pneumonia and in the hospital right now, and then Juwan James. Like, we get all of that. But if you just project out, and I know this is an if, and this is not the easiest thing to wrap your head around, if you just project out a Niner offense without Brandon Ayuk, that, and with Brock Purdy, like, and with everybody else, that should be, as you're talking about, the best offense in the NFL.
Agreed.
The only difference right now between the Niners, who are not the best offense in the NFL, and the Lions or the Ravens or whoever, who are the best offense in the NFL, as you're talking about, the Niners score on a higher percentage of their drives than those teams do. The only difference is the red zone inefficiency. If you're efficient in the red zone, this team would be averaging like 34 points per game this year.
Yep.
Despite everything, and that's without the reigning offensive player of the year. So I'm entirely with you. Like, through 7 weeks, it has been nothing short of infuriating. Like, the Rams loss, the Cardinals loss upsets me 100 times more than this Chiefs loss. I get it. It's a big game. You want to get a certain amount of revenge on the Chiefs for those two Super Bowl losses. I get all of that. But you, even with this terribly embarrassing, disgusting performance, Kyle, if you just took care of business in two division games where you had double-digit leads in the second half, you would be 5-2, and you'd be sitting pretty not only in the NFC West, but you'd be a game out of the one seed in the NFC. Like, this team is a couple of plays away from, despite all of their issues, and it wouldn't change us talking about all of those issues. We'd still be pointing them out even if they were 5-2, but they're only a couple of plays away from being 5-2. And I know they're not, and we can't pretend that they are, but it's not as if this season has been such a disaster that they are a play or two away from being the worst team in the NFL. They're a play or two away from still damn near being the best team in the NFL, even though it hasn't looked pretty.
Yeah, and that they didn't make those plays, right? There's no denying they are a 3-4 football team. I don't know that there's ever been a more 3-4 football team than this one. But on the other hand, that matters when you're projecting out what does this look like over the next 10 weeks or 10 games. That the fact that hey, they were really close to being 5-2 right now. Like that stuff matters. When you start to piece together a complete picture of this season and you get away from the emotion of like, gosh, special teams here and a bad interception there and a bad defensive play there. When you start stripping that emotion away from it and you go, you just kind of look at the data, it's like, man, they really are long-term better than their record shows. I know your record, you are what your record says you are. And that's true of the 49ers through 7 weeks, but there's a lot of reason to believe that they're better than that over the next 10 games.
Yeah. And I mean, they better be. Otherwise, you're going to be looking at an interesting offseason ahead.
Watching a lot of Cam Ward tape. I'm joking.
Could you imagine if they use their first round pick in the coming draft on a quarterback?
It's the funniest outcome. Like, it's definitely the funniest outcome if they do that.
I have a friend from school who's never been a huge sports fan, but I've taught him to get into sports. And his way to root for sporting events and the way that he gets into it is just simply rooting for the funniest possible outcome. So he's certainly rooting for that. but yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I don't mean to like pour cold water on all of our frustrations, and it really isn't that. Like, I'm frustrated as hell too, and listen to Kyle Shanahan talk. You can hear it. You can hear it in the players, the way that they talk. Fred Warner post game last night was just fed up with everything. I mean, Nick Bosa talking about how The rules make it hard for them to tackle quarterbacks. I get it, but the Mahomes scramble yesterday, Kyle, and you have Nick Bosa post game talking about, well, he's running to the sideline and it's difficult for us as defenders to try to hit him, because if we do when he goes out of bounds, it's a 15-yard penalty. I wasn't a fan of that, but you can just hear the frustration everywhere across the board right now, because they know that they're better than what they're putting out there, and I'm confident that they will. But I mean, that Mahomes run, Kyle, that was special. And it wasn't, for me, I don't know where your brain went to. I got off the air last night on overtime along with you and Sterling, and my mind hadn't even thought of, well, the Niners didn't tackle Patrick Mahomes because they were worried about getting a 15-yard penalty on that run. I just thought it was over pursuit by D. Winters. I thought it was the general lack of discipline on the pass rush that allowed Mahomes to get to the outside. I thought it was Mahomes being more athletic than Fred Warner was ready for, getting around him. I thought it had so much more to do with the greatness of Mahomes, the Niners' lack of discipline, than anything else. Certainly not anything to do with the rules of a quarterback running near the sideline.
Yeah, dude, D. Winters overran that play. Like, flat out. He didn't come up short because he thought Mahomes was going to step out of bounds. So maybe the Niners defense thought he was going out of bounds, so they stopped playing. That's on them.
That's 100% worse. On them. That's worse than being scared about a penalty if you think the play's over when it's not.
Yeah, right. That's a massive, massive issue. And if D. Winters had run up and like just run into Patrick Mahomes but not tackled him, or like run up to him and stopped and then Mahomes ran by him, that'd be one thing. He over pursued it. That's a young player getting okie doked by a veteran. That happens on the field sometimes. My problem with the complaints about Mahomes looked like he was going to step out of bounds. How do you officiate that? Because they outlawed the fake slide right after Kenny Pickett did it at Pitt.
Yeah.
Where he started to slide, but then the defender stopped and then Pickett stood up and kept running. Like they you can outlaw that because that's easy. I don't know how you outlaw what Patrick Mahomes did. If that was really what he was doing, like, oh, I'm gonna fake like I'm going out of bounds, but then I'm not going to. I don't know how you officiate that. Is the play dead when the quarterback stops moving his feet? Is that what we do? Is it two-hand touch when the quarterback gets outside the hash marks? Do you paint a separate line that, like, hey, this is the quarterback no-touchy zone, and it's a two-hand touch if he's in this zone? Like, I don't know. I don't know how you officiate that if that's really what it is.
Let's just play flag football now.
I think D. Winters got.
I think so, too.
I think that's the start and end of that play.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. And, I mean, do you remember a couple of weeks ago when Nick Sorensen was asked about the Niners, all their missed tackles, and he essentially said he's not worried about it because we teach our guys to be so overly aggressive. So as a result, you're going to make a lot of really nice plays and nice tackles, but as a result, you're also going to miss a bunch because you're being so aggressive and you're swarming to the football and all of that. Maybe we should reconsider that, because I mean, they also couldn't tackle anybody yesterday either. I know the defense was not the issue, and that Mahomes run is just one example, but that last scoring drive for the Kansas City Chiefs, 12 plays, 80 yards, 6.5 minutes off the clock. And it was like run, run, pass, run, run, pass, run, run. Like, it was almost all runs, and they were Kareem Hunt consistently falling forward. I'm not sure how many times Tom Brady said on the Fox broadcast, man, this Chiefs offense, they just always fall forward. It's also been kind of epidemic of the Niners defense, is it's taken a couple of guys to bring these ball carriers down lately.
Yeah, man, I was looking at the Chiefs' longest plays yesterday. The Mahomes 33-yard run was their longest play of the day. Mecole Hardman had the 20-yard run for the touchdown. And then, the 18-yard run was a touchdown, but he had 20. And then Noah Gray had a 26-yard catch, and that was their longest completion of the day. So much of what happened yesterday was just the Chiefs getting 4 yards here, 5 yards yep. there. Big third down. Travis Kelce puts a move on Jair Brown,
yep.
and he goes for 7 yards on a third and four. What was the play where they ran the screen, and was it Jair Brown who jumped it?
That one was D. And Winters. He over pursued, trying to get around the block of, I think.
Yeah. Whoever the lineman was. Yeah. Just tried to get around the block and over pursued the play.
Yeah.
It's like couple of plays that they'd love to have back, but man, they do. Like, now that we bring up the missed tackle thing, they miss a lot of tackles.
They do. They really, really do. And if there is maybe other than the injury news to Ayuk, who's out for the season with a torn ACL and MCL, and of course the questions around McCaffrey and others, if there's one reason why maybe you're not convinced that the Niners have a run in them, at least a la 2022, when they were 3-4 after a Week 7 loss to the Chiefs, something you pointed out last night, it might be because this defense isn't, at least at this point, nearly as good as they were a couple of years ago. But that's all we got time for today, Kyle. I'm glad that we were able to get a little bit of positivity in today. We will check in throughout the season, of course, as we're with you every week here on the Football Hour on 95.7 The Game. Looking forward to our next edition. But until then, Kyle, I'll talk to you later. Appreciate you hanging out with me, as always.
Can't wait, dude.
Cool. Looking forward to that. That's Kyle Madsen. My name is Mark Randy, signing off. Thanks so much for tuning into the Football Hour. We'll be back tomorrow bright and early with Bonte and Shasky on the Morning Roast here on 95.7 The Game.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.